beans, couch, and potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Trolls World Tour, We Summon the Darkness, The Amazing Stories Reboot, and Home Before Dark. I'll also be talking about some news, the Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Willow from The Vault and Doolittle from just a couple months ago. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
First of all, a sad section of the news. We've got multiple celebrity deaths, not all of them related to COVID-19, though. Honor Blackman, she was age 94. She passed away of natural causes this week. Best known for the iconic character of Pussy Galore from the third installment of the James Bond franchise, Goldfinger. Also passed away at the age of 92 is legendary Mad Magazine artist Mort Drucker. He is up there with like Jack Davis, in my opinion, as one of the best illustrators in Mad Magazine. Both Jack Davis and Mort Drucker had, they were very realistic caricatures that they would draw, but they also clearly had the artist's style to them. So Mort Drucker was, an institution when I was reading Mad Magazine way back in the day. It's sad to see him go. There's also Lee Fierro. She's best known for being Mrs. Kittner in Jaws. She played the mother of the boy that gets eaten by the shark in the original Jaws. She died at age of 91. She did pass away due to complications with COVID-19. And then finally, Dieter Laser actually passed away in February. His family didn't announce this until just this week, but he's best known for playing the mad scientist in the original Human Centipede. Maybe not as an illustrious of a career as Lee Fierro had, but Dieter Laser, he's the one that made that movie. The movie itself's not that good, but Dieter Laser raises it above what it possibly could have been. And then he has a little bit where he comes back in the third movie and plays a role. But that's sad to see him go. He transformed the movie. He was the only reason to see the movie, aside from the conversation piece of it. He passed away back in February, right after he turned 78. On to a little bit more uplifting news. Rifftracks.com, who of course the people who did Mystery Science Theater, they are trying to help out a friend who has a movie that was going to be doing a festival run until everything got shut down from the coronavirus, the lockdowns and the closing of theaters. The guy's name is David Giancola, and he's best known for doing the movie Time Chasers. Now, if you've never seen Time Chasers, it was famously done on Mystery Science Theater. And then a couple of years ago, the Riff Tracks people riffed it again. They remastered the footage and they put in some deleted scenes and they did another riff of Time Chasers. And then they went on to riff pretty much every other movie that this guy made. Whether it was, this thing called Icebreakers with Sean Astin, to Arachnia, which is about a monster spider. They've done more of this guy's movies than anybody else. And that's saying a lot compared to somebody, like Joe Don Baker. But apparently, Giancola has a decent relationship with the folks at Riff Tracks, and his movie called Accelerator, AccelerAtor, which is sort of like accelerator only with an A instead of an X. That movie was going to be put on the festival circuit. It's now pulled off of that. And with Accelerator, I'm going to just play you a real quick bit of the trailer so you get a taste of what this is all about.
About 60 seconds, a bunch of guys with guns are going to kill us both. If you don't do as I say, drive.
This is the second time you've been late this week.
I made something. Something that could change everything, the whole world.
One more write-up, and you'll be terminated. And
these people are chasing us because they want it.
What is this?
That, teleports human beings from one place into another?
Are you like a crazy person?
You have a small army at your disposal. Will you use it?
You get me that thing? It's going to be Christmas morning.
Rift Tracks for this weekend only is allowing you to stream it for free on their platform. Just go to rifttracks.com/accelerator, like accelerator only with an A instead of an E, and you can stream this for free. And that's great, because then it's going to go on to Amazon Prime and for rental on there. But if you want to check it out, they wanted to give a sneak peek at this guy's latest work. And this is great for people just sort of supporting each other and filmmakers that if we've worked together in the past. Another shameless plug for me, I have published my latest anthology of horror stories called 13 More Turns. It's available now in the Kindle store via Amazon. And there's going to be a giveaway this weekend. If you're floating around this weekend online, you might be able to get it for free. You can look at my other books, 13 Turns, which is 13 horror stories, The Ghost Readers and Other Stories, which is a collection of science fiction stories, the novel Underbrush, and then the novellas, Gobble and Not the End. Those are all available on Amazon, and there's going to be giveaways throughout the months for each of these works. But 13 More Turns, brand new, this weekend. You can get it for free. And to help promote it, I will likely be doing an audiobook special sometime in the next week or so of just one of the stories, so you can taste it before you take the whole piece of pie. Those are all available this week. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. I'm going to quickly burn through these trailers. The first one is, I'm not going to really dwell on the name of it. Let's just say it has a certain, it's a mature content. It's a horror movie. It's from Fangoria. And the name of the movie, it starts with a P, and it's for something that's just to call it adult theater is what you would do it. But it's a horror movie based on that. It opens on Vimeo this weekend. Let's take a listen.
You guys hear that? The human brain, when aroused by erotic images, dumps chemicals into the bloodstream, which send the viewer into full throttle, give me more mode.
No, that's right. And we may think that we're just being curious, but that will turn into an obsession.
Guys, when we watch that movie, we unleashed a sex demon.
Now, if you want to check this one out, this is another one that's getting a special early release. Fangoria is releasing it for good on demand on May 8th, but you can watch it on Vimeo if you want to watch this. It's a horror comedy. It's spoofing slasher movies and adult films. And if you want to watch this weekend, if you go to fangoria.com/watchporno, which is the name of the movie, and you can attribute to your individual theaters. There's like the Alamo Drafthouse or my hometown favorite, Gateway Film Center. You can choose whoever gets the piece of your rental fee, and then you can watch it via Vimeo. It's $12, and you can watch it again, that sort of that 48-hour watch window a month before it comes out on demand for real. The next trailer I want to hit really quickly is Extraction, which is a Netflix movie with Chris Hemsworth, comes out on April 24th.
This is an extraction.
So who are the players?
Biggest drug lord in India versus biggest drug lord in Bangladesh. It's a kidnapping. Drug lord's son. Clock's running at 16 hours. Proof of life as of 6 hours ago.
You want to survive, you do exactly as I say.
Something's wrong. The city's on lockdown.
This one looks fine. It's got the Russo brothers producing it. This looks like a lot of these, they're throwing in a lot of these action movies through Netflix. And I've seen a couple of them. They work fine. This looks like it's doing for the international soldier action movie for Chris Hemsworth what the Russo brothers are doing with 21 Bridges for Chadwick Boseman. Anyways, this one looks like it might be fine. I might cover it in the next 2 weeks. But that is it. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Amazing Stories and Home Before Dark. And Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the actual reviews. I gave you a couple options from the last one, whether it's the Fangoria movie or Accelerator. Through Riff Tracks, I think, is a great way to... And that's important. And the reason this is important is because the theaters are shut down. There's nowhere to go see a lot of this stuff. And everything's got to be beamed into our homes. Now, certain things, like I'm going to be talking about Apple TV content right now in this segment, or it's going to be Amazon, and there's Hulu, and there's Netflix, and there's all the other individual channels. But for some of these movies, they had to scramble to figure out how they're going to release it to people. And with Fangoria partnering with a bunch of different independent theaters around the country, they're spreading the wealth that way. And you've also got, you know, people like Riff Tracks, who are putting Accelerator on for people to watch to give a little bit of recognition to that movie. And who knows, they're probably going to riff that one soon enough anyways. And you know, I think that's great. I think it's good that people are banding together for the independent people, for those who do not have anything to fall back on. And that's wonderful. But let's talk about the people who do have a little bit of money to fall back on. And that is Apple TV. They've got a couple new shows that are out I wanted to talk about, because those are, of course, streaming content. You can get them right now if you got the Apple TV Plus app. I covered a little bit of their content last year at the end of the year when, of course, they had the morning show. But this one is Amazing Stories. Apple TV Plus is relaunching the sci-fi anthology series from the 1980s.
What if it does these things for a reason?
Maybe all this always happened. Maybe you were always meant to come back with me.
I gotta figure this out. Great. Buckle up.
You're a superhero, Grandpa. Cool.
That's not a coincidence. You gotta do something big.
I'll see you on the other side.
I remember when this came out back in, it was like 86, I think, was when it premiered. There was a resurgence in the mid-80s of anthology television programs. Of course, the most famous one, even though it wasn't the first one, the most famous one was Twilight Zone, which premiered in 1959. And they did a reboot of the Twilight Zone in the 80s that was somewhat popular. And of course, they've rebooted the Twilight Zone for CBS All Access. So we're kind of getting another reboot of anthology TV. But back in the 80s, even before this, you had a couple smaller syndicated programming, stuff like Tales from the Dark Side and Monsters, smaller budget, just sort of anthology programs. And of course, I think as you got into the 90s, there were other ones that had a little more connective tissue, like the Friday the 13th series, which had nothing to do with Jason, but was more like a Warehouse 13, where they're trying to find artifacts. They had Nightmare Cafe with Robert Englund as Freddy. But of course, the big reboots were The Twilight Zone and Alfred Hitchcock Presents. And Steven Spielberg jumped in the game, and I think it was with NBC, to do Amazing Stories, which is based on the classic magazine, Amazing Stories. The only thing that really bothered me about when they did Amazing Stories is they didn't mind the stories from Amazing Stories. They just took the name. And I never thought that the stories in Amazing Stories were all that amazing. Now that we've got this one, and it's a reboot, I've only had a chance to see the first episode of it, which is called The Cellar, which stars the kid from The Maze Runner, and he was also in Teen Wolf. And with him, he's at the bottom of the cellar of this old house, and an atmospheric event sends him back in time. And he falls in love with a woman back there, and he's kind of jumping around time trying to catch up with her. And I'm like, the story was fine. I mean, it was well done, and it was well acted and competently shot, and it looked very good. A little low on the actual special effects, but that's okay. You don't need special effects to make a movie. But my problem was, is this looked like an episode of The Twilight Zone that I'd seen a dozen times already, a couple times. I recently rewatched the entire series of The Twilight Zone last year, and there's two or three, at least, episodes of The Twilight Zone that this one almost directly borrows from. And my thought is, if you're going to relaunch Amazing Stories, you should relaunch with some gusto. You should relaunch with something that is a powerful, exciting, speculative fiction that really captures that amazing part of it. And this one really didn't. And so, I mean, I don't know about the rest of them. I think it's five episodes, but I was unimpressed. Like, compared to like Tales from the Loop, which I talked about last weekend, Tales from the Loop was very speculative. Tales from the Loop, is supposed to be more grounded in reality. It felt like this episode was chasing that concept more than the amazing and the amazing stories. So for right now, I'm going to have to say Amazing Stories kind of sucks, but it might get better.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about another show from Apple TV Plus, and that is Home Before Dark. A 9-year-old journalist who publishes her own paper moves to a small town with her family, only to uncover a decades-old cold case that she breaks open.
Where have you been all day?
At the crime scene.
Crime scene?
When he left, your dad said he would never move back here.
How come?
You're in 88. The mayor's kid went missing. They never found out what happened to Richie.
My best friend. He was taken. Right in front of me.
Young lady, you have no idea what you're getting into.
I feel like being called a young lady should be a compliment, but it never sounds like it is.
This is actually based on a real girl who at the time was 9, who did publish her own newspaper. I think she distributed around people, and she would like investigate murders. I mean, she was 9. She got criticized and at times ran into some authoritative pushback, we'll say. But doggone it, if the girl didn't know her rights as a journalist, and she usually prevailed. But it's based on the fact that she's this girl that moves to a small town and just starts, you know, picking at the scabs of the underbelly of the town, and people aren't happy about it. And the story itself is actually pretty good. It's taking its time to play out. And like any story that goes over, you know, 10 episodes, you have to eke out the interesting parts of the story. You can't just dump it all out in the first episode or there's nothing else to build on. But it actually makes it work this way. Sometimes it's so easy that they're holding stuff back that it's frustrating to watch. But this one, she's digging and it's her coming up and pulling on strings and finding out what's behind door number one and door number two. Now, the girl who plays the main character in there, it's named Brooklyn Price, and she, the actress, she was best known for being in The Florida Project, and she is a great little actress. She was fantastic in The Florida Project. She's great in this one, and she really holds it together. What I find so interesting about this series is in every TV show, you have like an A story, a B story, and a C story. And of course, hers is the A story. She's befriended a cop in the sheriff's department, and she's got a couple friends that help her run around and uncover things. And then she's got like a teenage sister. And then of course she has her parents who are dealing with the blowback of her pushing this investigation. And of course the background history of it in the story, when it's her, the girl, the 9-year-old, it's almost a Nancy Drew type thing. Now it's dealing with unpleasant stuff like murder and killing and that sort of thing, but it gives her kind of this grounding of a story that a kid would watch, you know, something you watch with your family. It seems geared towards a younger audience. And then when they get to the teen stuff, it feels like it's aimed for a teenage audience. And then you get to the grown-up stuff and it feels like it's aimed for a grown-up audience. And that's actually a really tough line and tone to balance between all three. And it does that pretty well. So it's worth checking out. Like I said, the acting, and particularly this girl who plays the main role, she's very good and very compelling. So I'm going to have to say that Home Before Dark kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Trolls World Tour and We Summon the Darkness. Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Trolls World Tour. Let's go ahead and just play the trailer here because there's a lot I have to say about this. Queen Poppy goes head-to-head with Queen Barb of the Hard Rock Trolls when she tries to take all magical strings from the troll worlds and wipe out all music except her own.
I'm Queen Barb of the Hard Rock Trolls. I'm here to take your string, bro.
Ooh, don't do it, man!
We lose our string, we lose our music.
I'm gonna unite the 6 strings and destroy all music, except for rock!
I can't believe another queen would use her power for evil.
These other trolls aren't like us.
If Barb collects all the strings, our music will be destroyed forever.
Okay, first of all, you have to know the history of this Trolls release, because it's important, and it's potentially a game changer. Back about a month ago, when It was AMC and Cinemark and Regal decided to do the responsible thing and shut down movie theaters for 6 to 12 weeks. They effectively shut down movies around the country. They're independent cinemas, but they weren't going to get the big releases. And so when that shut down, everyone pulled the stuff off of the release schedule. Universal started dumping its stuff into on demand, as did Warner Brothers. Disney pulled everything. They got one out there on demand, which is Onward. And then everything else they just pushed far, far away into the future, which is fine. I mean, that's you got to do what you got to do. I mean, you're not going to make back the money they spent on Mulan or Black Widow with an on-demand release. But as you watch the dates come by, that April 10th Trolls World Tour date never moved. DreamWorks never pulled it off the schedule. And I thought that's a gutsy move to do, because how are you going to show this thing? And so they decided to pivot to a full online digital release. And it's not the first time you've gotten a sequel to a big movie into on-demand or video release, but it is the first time you've gotten a theatrical-worthy movie that goes directly to video. And they're really pushing it hard. There's going to be watch parties this weekend. They're pushing a lot of stuff with Trolls. If you go to the DreamWorks site, you can find all this other stuff you can download and play with and print out and do stuff with your kids. They're really pushing it as a big family release. They want a lot of people to watch it. And this could be a potential game changer, because this is testing the mettle of a full-blown online release. Now, to its credit and to its benefit, there's nothing out there new. It's not competing with something in the cinemas. So it's like $20 to rent. And that's just like they did with The Invisible Man and Emma and all these other movies that had come out on demand right at the beginning of this crisis. But no one's seen this yet. Until it's, well, now it's out, but it's $20 for a 48-hour rental. And here's the thing. Yeah, $20. Oh, I'm renting a movie for $20. That's expensive. No, it's not. If you were to have a family of four and you were to go see this movie on like a Saturday night in regular release, you would have spent a heck of a lot more than $20. So in a lot of ways, it's a steal for the consumer. And so if you have any interest in this movie, especially if you've got kids, go rent it this weekend, because at least let the people know, hey, what you're doing, we appreciate it, and I'm glad to participate in this level of commerce for you to bring your content to my door. And that's awesome. And as I mentioned in the previous segments, where we have other smaller companies helping out smaller releases, it's okay for the bigger companies to get compensated for their big releases. Now, the content of this movie itself, I was not a big fan of the first Troll movie. I kind of rolled my eyes at it. I thought it had this weird subtext of pharmaceutical antidepressant technology buried in. I was the only one who saw that. But there's also, I didn't like the overall message of the first Trolls being, you always have to be happy. You always have to want to sing and dance. And if you don't want to sing and dance, something's wrong with you. I think they left that behind. They left the anti-party people alone in this one. I when I first saw the trailers, I was like, this looks stupid. And it is. It's a Trolls movie, though. It's a big bowl of colorful, glitter, stupid. But you know what? We need a big bowl of colorful, glittery, stupid now, more than ever. And I have to say, this movie takes you out of whatever nonsense is going on in the world right now. This is a movie where you can watch for 93 minutes and forget about all the problems that are going on and just have a little bit of fun. Its tongue's firmly in its cheek. It has a lot of self-referential jokes. The movie's self-aware. It knows what it's doing. And it has this weird storyline that like really fits in the music world. Do you remember back in the 70s, they would have these rock albums where there'd be this evil overlord who, and the story through the album was there was some evil overlord who was going to shut down music forever. And it took this rock band that just needed to rock out hard enough to win. Bob's Burgers did a spoof on this one episode where it's this story that goes through the entire album, and they'd have a concert tour based on it. That's what this feels like. It has the evil overlord and then the trolls. Poppy and Branch have to try and stop this from happening, and they get it, and it works. And that's what makes Trolls World Tour a lot of fun. I enjoyed the heck out of this movie. I liked it way more than the first one, but I have to say it totally rocks. Watch it with the family this week. You know, spend some money on new content and enjoy it.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Yay!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the reviews for this segment, and that is We Summon the Darkness. Three young women head to a heavy metal concert and meet up with three guys in a van, turning the night into one of potential mayhem and murder.
Another gruesome ritualistic murder claimed the lives of six people last night following a heavy metal concert that local religious groups were protesting.
So you ready for Soldiers of Satan?
All right, let's go.
Cheers to a night that we're going to remember for years to come.
Hear, hear.
Girls, be careful now. There's a lot of evil out there.
You don't think we can fend for ourselves?
How many more children must die in Satan's name?
Both Trolls World Tour and We Summon the Darkness I enjoyed. But what's funny with We Summon the Darkness is it's on the flip side of Trolls. I mean, Trolls is very much a family movie. You can watch it with the kids, even though there's some great cameos of people the kids may or may not recognize. We Summon the Darkness is not for kids. It's for adults. It's a horror movie, equivalent of a slasher-esque type movie. It has a lot of blood in it, you know, so just go in knowing that. But We Summon the Darkness, it takes place in the 80s. Like 88, I think is when it takes place. And it spins off that hysteria that was really ramped up back then. This real pushback against rock music and particularly, you know, bands like Slayer and Megadeth and the stuff, especially ones that would lean into the satanic stuff. Which, like, if you listen to Alice Cooper, that was all kind of an act anyways. But, you know, it takes place during the hysteria of that, which was in the mid-80s. And if you remember back then, you know, every horror movie, every slasher movie had some sort of hair band metal element to it. And, you know, it's funny because I had a friend who was really into this stuff. He loved Anthrax and stuff like that. And he was like the sweetest guy. He was just a really nice guy. But he was into that bang your head type stuff. I never got into it. But he'd go to all these concerts and it was more or less fluff on the outside. The fluff only was made of black leather and safety pins. But We Summon the Darkness is one that does kind of play into the genre. It deconstructs the sort of the slasher genre, the girls in trouble genre. And it also plays with conventions and it has like twists and turns. Some of them you can see coming a mile away. Some of them not so much, which is great because it's not just one little twist to the whole movie. There's a lot of little things going on, which I had a lot of fun watching it because it had enough stuff happening. It wasn't just a group of people caught in a bad situation, then you're just watching them either be tortured or stalked for the entire time. Sort of like when Us came out last year, there was more to it than just a home invasion movie. And that's kind of what I liked about this film, is it kept revealing some things and it kept working on the genre classic and what you'd expect. So some good performances. Alexandra Daddario plays one of the main characters. You got Johnny Knoxville having a bit part in here. And they really kind of lean into these roles. And it's a fun movie. It's enough of a comedy, but without being a tongue-in-cheek comedy. If you know the genre, you get the jokes. So I'm going to have to say that We Summon the Darkness totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Willow and Doolittle. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the final segment here. This is one of the adjustments I've been making on this show. And that is, we're not really doing box office right now because nothing's really happening in the box office right now. At some point, I'll probably have some sort of an update next week because I'll be able to talk about, hopefully, how well Trolls World Tour did. I think a lot of eyes are on that. And the reason people are looking at that is because this might be the new normal for some releases. This might be just a way. I don't think it's going to replace theatrical distribution at all. Not even close. And I know there have been stories about like AMC theaters, which is the dominant chain where I'm from. Anyways, this just shows that things are different. And right now I'm going to push away the box office assignments, because it doesn't make any sense. I mean, I know there are some places that are doing remote virtual screenings of some movies, but a lot of them, you know, when a family of four is likely to get a larger stimulus check than the entirety of the box office in the United States for a weekend, we might want to press pause on that. So we're going to do that. We're going to start off with, and so that will come back in a couple weeks, whenever the box office is open again. AMC is in my hometown, and they're talking about they may not be able to even bounce back. They might have to declare bankruptcy over this shutdown period. And that would be a shame. I mean, I've gone to AMC for years, but you know, I'm sure that things will survive. The world and the economy and a lot of things are going to be different. But things will survive, and let's just hope we can get out with as little damage as possible. Anyways, let's move on and listen to that sound. That means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today, I have a couple features I want to do. The first one is on Willow. It's an old movie. It's a vintage film. And of course, Willow was a movie, I think it came out in 1988, which was a Lucasfilm movie. And at the time, Lucasfilm wasn't owned by Disney, and Lucasfilm was its own entity and had done the Star Wars movies. It had been 5 years since the Star Wars movie. They were getting ready to do the third Indiana Jones movie, but they were kind of in this lull at this point. You know, it'd been a couple of years since Return of the Jedi. We weren't yet at the next Indiana Jones movie. So we're in this downtime, and Lucas has constantly been trying over the 80s, trying to restart a new franchise. He had done that with Labyrinth. He had done that with Howard the Duck, and Willow was his next attempt. And of course he tapped Ron Howard as a director, which is funny because, you know, a lot of people looked at Solo a couple years ago and thought, oh, well, that was the Ron Howard big break. But no, really, Lucasfilm had been working with Ron Howard in the past for a while. And of course, you know, he had worked with Ron Howard with American Graffiti. So he was giving Ron Howard, you know, a little bit of a push in his career. So they came out with Willow. It was supposed to be a big hit. It wasn't a huge hit. It didn't do as well as it could have. But it's interesting to watch because now it's on Disney Plus. If you've got the Disney Plus service, they had come out with the Blu-ray, oh gosh, about 10 years ago. And that was when it was, I think, property was owned by Fox. Now that Disney has bought not just Lucasfilm, but Fox, it's all completely under the banner of Disney. So you can get it on the Disney Plus service. And that's what I did. We live tweeted it last weekend, had a lot of fun. We're going to be live tweeting Black Hole this week, which is a Disney film. And I think the following week, we're going to be doing, another Disney movie from the Plus service because there's some fun epic adventures. But for Willow, Ron Howard directs this Lucasfilm fantasy about a dwarf who must take an abandoned human baby back to its people to stop an evil sorceress from taking over the world.
Why, with my powers, with the strength of my great army, can you not find one little child?
Tell her I'm not gonna let anything happen to the baby.
We gotta give that baby to somebody.
I'm somebody.
You're a great warrior and a swordsman. And you're 10 times bigger than I am, stupid!
Find the child! Find the child!
Like I said, this was not a big hit in terms of box office. And I think part of it, going back, especially watching it now, more than 30 years later, there's reasons for it. The story takes a while to get going. There's some real pacing issues. There's also points where they're really trying to put in the slapstick They have these two little brownies played by Kevin Pollak and this other guy, and it just doesn't organically fit. It doesn't quite work together. And they have these, they have these moments of swashbuckling action, and that stuff's great. There's a great carriage sequence that rivals the Maverick carriage sequence. They have a great scene where they're fighting this dragon at the end. But we're also right at 88. We're at the time between when they started doing digital effects and started lifting away from stop motion. And so they have one of the first times they used morphing in the movie. They have this special effect, but it's still in its infancy and they're still playing with some digital effects here. And that takes some time to make it work. But overall, I mean, it's a fun movie. Like I said, it's slow, especially at the beginning. The beginning is very, very slow. And it's a little bit goofy with the storyline and plot, but it's a different movie. It's something that, while it does have all the tropes that you'd expect from a summer blockbuster type movie, it still has some stuff you don't see very often anymore. So I'm going to have to say Willow had a lot of fun rewatching that. I'm going to say Willow kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next one I want to talk about in the home cinema roundup is Doolittle. Robert Downey Jr. stars as the legendary biologist who can talk to the animals traveling around the globe to find a cure for the ill queen.
Are you Dr. Doolittle?
We have no choice but to embark on this perilous journey.
Everyone pack your bags!
You can talk to animals.
Somehow, we just belong together.
This was somewhat of a flop this year, and I thought it got undue annoyance from the critics. I think it's interesting, especially watching it now in the middle of all this COVID-19 business. This should not have been as maligned as it was in January. There are people like, oh, this is the worst movie ever. It's fun. It's silly. I remember as a child reading some of the Dr. Doolittle books, and this, I felt, really captured a little bit more of the essence, not 100%, but some more of the essence that you had with the Eddie Murphy Dr. Doolittle books. Just, they didn't follow the story. They just took the concept of a guy who could talk to animals. But at least in this one, and I think I said this when I reviewed the movie itself, I liked the fact that you could say he talked to the animals, but he had a way of, he actually, in this movie, talks to them using their own language, which I think makes the movie feel a little, no, he's not really talking to gorillas here, but it makes it feel more in line, because that's the whole point, is that it's not that Dr. Doolittle had this magical ability, he was just such a good scientist that he learned how to speak to them, he learned how to use their language, he learned how to interact with them, and that's kind of what made the character work. And then they would go on these ships and go on these big grand adventures and take these kids into these horribly perilous situations. And yeah, there's a little more fart jokes in this one than you would expect. But that's not the entirety of the movie. There is some pacing issues, there's some editing issues that are a little bizarre, and there's a whole section where it feels like something had been removed. So I think there's editing issues through the whole movie, and we don't get like an extended cut of this on the Blu-ray, but it's still a fun little movie to watch. I enjoyed it. I thought Robert Downey Jr.'s, kudos to him for trying to do something different. The poor guy wants to get out of the Iron Man role, and that's fine. Iron Man's made him enough money. Let him do something different and something else. And I think it's great that he's trying to spin off and do his own thing, but he's not like thumbing his nose at Marvel at the same time. So I enjoyed Doolittle. I thought it was good. It has some special features, not loaded. There's just more behind the scenes stuff. And it's like Robert Downey Jr. talking about what it was like to work with some of these people, but that works. I thought Doolittle was a lot of fun. So I'm going to have to say Doolittle kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Also out this week, we have Little Women, Cats, All the Pretty Horses, and Terror Train, and that is it for the week. Now, next week, we've got a couple more things that are coming out on demand, like Sela and the Spades, The Quarry, and Behind You, and I think that's it. I better go. Hope you guys are staying safe. I hope you guys are staying healthy. Thank you for listening, and I will be here for your listening pleasure, and I'll talk to you guys next week. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.